Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM.
You can follow KBOO on all your social media platforms. Just look for KBOO on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content and news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KBOO.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess, and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me dio dos luceros que cuando los abro perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco, y en el alto cielo su fondo estrellado, y en las multitudes el hombre que yo amo. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado el sonido y el abecedario, con el las
and, well, you've tuned in to, guess what, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. We're live in the air room once more with Once Upon a Time with Consuelo. And remember, we are here the first and third Friday of the month at 11 a.m. And I have to warn you, the time is going to change soon. It has to do with Consuelo's new life endeavors. But however, Once Upon a Time will continue on air. We're very proud to have you part of our public affairs department. Consuelo, the mic is all yours.
Okay, good morning, everybody. We start the program today with this wonderful creation by Violeta Parra from Chile called Thanks to Life, or Gracias a la Vida, in the version of Mercedes Sosa, an Argentinian singer who I admire very much. I have it right now in my CD at home, so I listen to her almost every night. And today's a very special program because I have a woman from Chile too. It's the first time that I I have a chance to invite somebody from my country, and we are going to talk about oral tradition and in relation to what she does. Her name is Jessie Escobar, and we are going to start first with Jessie. You can call now, and I will start talking a little bit about what oral tradition is. We all know that oral tradition goes from generation to generation in one way or another. There are many different ways that this can be a variety of a spoken form, including proverbs, tales, nursery rhyme, legend, myth, epic, song, and oral tradition. They are expression of, are used to pass on knowledge, cultural, and social value, and collective memories. They play a crucial part in keeping ourselves and our culture alive. I think it's very important how we go generation to generation to tell about family tradition, community tradition, and country's tradition. And this is one way how we not only generate that kind of information, but we keep alive through other generation. And that is what is important about tradition, this kind of oral tradition. Also, we have to think, when we didn't have the print, we couldn't publish. And so it was one way people could relate to each other and could learn about other community because of distance and because different kind of tribes and community, and this allow to learn from one another, to communicate with the music, for example. We know that through music and other aspect. And here we are, Jessie. I am going to talk a little bit longer about oral tradition later, and here is Jessie. Hola, Jessie. How are you today?
Good, Consuelo. How are you?
Oh, I am here very excited, as I said, to have you. And I would like to start, I would like you to introduce yourself. I know you were born in Chile, and how that went. You, at what time, for what reason you came to the state? I know that you came directly to Florida. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I grew up in Santiago. That's the Chile's capital. And I feel like I had a great childhood because I was very loved by my grandma. My parents were very busy working to kind of make ends meet, so I didn't get the chance to have them very close to me when I was growing up, but I know, I always knew that they were there for me. So I think I was lucky, and I had a good, lovely childhood. My dad moved to U.S. when I was 6 years old, so we had a long distance relationship, and he always stayed in contact, and we talked on the phone while I was growing up. He didn't go back to Chile for over 10 years. I think it was close to 12 years when he went back for the first time. So I didn't see him for all that time. So by the time I saw him again, I was already a teenager. But our relationship, I feel like it was as if he had never left. We had a good relationship, and he was my dad. And then he always offered for me to come and live with him because he knew that he could give me better opportunities in this country than what we could afford in Chile, because we are from a very poor economic situation. So we stayed in contact, and he offered me, by the time I turned 12, I think I made the decision to finally start making the paperwork so that I could come to this country.
Yeah, can you talk?
Hello.
Yes, I am listening. And yeah, I would like to know now, because the interesting part is what you are doing now. So I would like to know the relationship that you had with your grandma.
Yeah, so like I said, I grew up with my grandma. For the longest time, it was just her and me in our house. And my grandma was born in the southern part of Chile, in a countryside, very remote. She didn't have much education. It was a very countryside area of Chile. And then in her mid-20s, she decided to move to Santiago. And she loved cooking, so she wanted to be trained and learn more about it. And so she worked pretty much all her life doing that. She worked really hard, and she worked in many restaurants in downtown Santiago. And she was trained by many chefs in there. And then she started selling food. She tried to put her own stand of food, and she worked on her own recipes. And I got to experience all of that with her. I remember being with her all the time in the kitchen, working on making breads and making, you know, cakes and empanadas. And she used to make so many different types of empanadas, and I used to love it. I used to, and that's my favorite memory of me growing up, just being in the kitchen with my grandma and eating empanadas.
Yeah, very nice. I mean, so that was the first oral tradition, because she was passing to you and to your mother first the recipe, and she was teaching you by example, and she was encouraging you without knowing to give you a kind of work or vocation. And you inherited not only the recipe, but the vocation of sharing your ability for cooking and give that pleasure to many people, even now in the United States. I think that is great. And I love it when we met, the way how this tradition passed from her to your mother, and then from you to your daughter. So it's four generations of empanadas and other Chilean food that you are sharing, and let this community, new community, because you moved from Florida to Portland when you met your husband, and it has been a very good experience, seems to me. So now you have a food car. Tell us about that.
So, you know, life works in mysterious ways. Yes. As I was growing up, I had never thought of using my grandma's recipes for anything else but family. But once I moved to Oregon, we quickly realized that there was no Chilean food in here. And our community, even though small, is I believe very united, and a lot of people were looking for somebody to you know, open a restaurant or do something so that we can get our food in here, and so that we can also share that food with locals in here, because we really are very proud of our empanadas. I think and now that I have this food truck, I have been able to see how people just fall in love with our empanadas.
Yeah.
And
yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and so that's how I think 3 years ago got serious with the idea. We had been toying with the idea of opening a food cart or even a restaurant, but a restaurant was too hard, you know, economically. So we were toying with the idea of opening a food cart, and 3 years ago I decided I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna get serious on this, and I'm gonna, you know, grind numbers and start get serious and do it. just very, move ahead with it.
Very good. So you are an entrepreneur, and we will start with I brought some poem related to food. This is a poem about Oda a la Empanada, and my friend Ender, he is going to read in English, and I am going to read in Spanish after he finished. It's a small, it's a short text that was written by a Colombian guy called DJ. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, here we go, and hopefully I'll read this fine.
You will.
Oh, magnificent empanada delight. The law has mistreated you, and that's not right. Your integrity I must defend. For your flavor I will always defend. They may try to hide you away, and surely I'll face fines one day. Whether it's meat, chicken, or cheese, so fine. For you, I'd gladly cross that line.
Nice. Okay, the version in Spanish is Oda a la empanada. Oh, magnífica empanada. Por la ley has sido maltratada. Tu integridad debo defender, pues no te pienso dejar de comer. Puede que te oculten y seguro me multen. Seas de carne, pollo, queso, por ti me hago meter preso. ¿Qué te parece? What do you think, Jesse?
I love it, and I think it's so on point with, you know, defending and honoring this empanada, which this is, I love it. I love empanadas.
Yeah, and in term of the which are your favorite, the pino empanada, the meat empanada, the cheese empanada, even they are different. Can you talk a little bit about the pino empanada? For example, why we call pino? Do you know why?
I actually don't know how the pino, that word came to it. I don't know the background of it. Do you know why?
No. I have a pretty much an idea. I think it's a combination because the empanada has so many elements, and so I want you to tell us about how you make the empanada.
So we cook the onions. We season the onions and we cook those first, caramelize them, how they call it here, and we use our spices. I put a little bit of merquén,
yeah,
which is a Chilean traditional spice, which I bring from Chile, so that they have a little bit of our land in them as well. We add the meat. We cook it all together, keep adding spices, and then taste it. We add them to the dough, and we can either fry them or bake them. Traditionally, Chileans bake them.
And what other element, like the raisin, like I told you the other day, and the egg?
Yeah.
Because the typical empanada has those elements, too, right, to the pino. Because the pino is what we call the pino, let's explain to our audience, is all the combination of all the ingredients. Mm-hmm. And you start with the onion, like you said, and then you are adding. And usually, I don't know you, but in the time I made some empanada when I came to the state, to Oregon 10,000 years ago, and I left the pino from one night to the next day. Do you do that too? Oh, you do that.
So traditionally, we believe it tastes much better if we leave it for the next day.
Yes.
So that it can absorb all the spices and all the flavors. And once you put it on the dough, then you add egg, olive, and you can add raisins. Some people don't like raisins. It's a very controversial.
Controversial, yes?
Yeah.
Why? Because it's a little bit sweet. That is the reason, because they don't like the onion, the raisin.
Or I think Chileans, we are very divided on who likes raisins and who don't like raisins.
Yeah, the other day it was funny because I saw, I follow Marco Enrique, and he was eating an empanada, and he said, "Do you eat it with raisin or you don't eat it with raisin?" I said, I eat it with raisin. I like that combination between sweet and bitter. Okay, yeah. For the onion is something very important. Ender is going to read in English one poem directly or dedicated to the onion, written by Pablo Neruda, our Nobel Prize, who won in 1971. There you are.
Oh, wow. I love reading things about onions.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And eating onions, too. I love it.
Yeah, onions. Yeah, definitely. So here we go. This is the ode to the onion. Onion, luminous dome, petal by petal, your flawlessness was formed. Crystal scales increase you. And in the secrecy of the dark earth, your rounded belly grew with dew. Beneath the earth, the miracle occurred. And when you appeared with your clumsy green stem, with leaves like spears in the garden, the land accumulated her power. And as in Aphrodite, the remote sea duplicated the magnolia in lifting her breasts. That's why the earth made you onion, clear as a planet and destined to shine, constant constellation, round rose or water on the table of the poor. Generously, you undo your globe of freshness in the fervent consummation of the soup pot and the crystal shred. In the ignited heat of the oil is transformed into a curly golden feather. I also remember how fertile your influence on the love of the salad is. And it appears that the sky contributes to celebrate your choppy clarity about the hemispheres of a tomato. But within reach of the hands of the people, sprinkled with a little sea salt, you kill hunger of the day laborer on his hard road. Star of the poor, fairy godmother, sheathed in delicate paper, you emerge from the ground, everlasting, intact, pure, like a seed of a star. And when you're caught by the knife in the kitchen, the only tear you shed is without sorrow. You make us weep without grief. How much I have celebrated you, onion. But to me, you are more beautiful than a bird with blinding feathers. You are to my eyes a celestial globe, a platinum cup, an immobile dance of the snowy anemone, and the fragrance of the earth thrives in your crystalline nature.
Oh, it's beautiful. Even in English, it's beautiful. I mean, I have to say, this translation was by Wally Swiss, and I think it's, yes. I will read it in Spanish, not as wonderful like Ender did, but I will try. Because the cebolla made me cry. Make you cry, the cebolla, Jesse, when you are cutting the cebolla?
every day, as it should.
Every day. I think the cebolla was done to help us to express our feeling. So every time that I am preparing and cutting and thinking how wonderful it's going to be, I think, give me that push. I will cry with you, cebolla. Okay, here we are. Cebolla, luminosa, redoma, pétalo a pétalo se formó tu hermosura. Escamas de cristal te acrecentaron y en el secreto de la tierra oscura se redondeó tu vientre de rocío. Bajo la tierra fue el milagro y cuando apareció tu torpe tallo verde y nacieron tus hojas como espadas en el huerto, la tierra acumuló su poderío mostrando tu desnuda transparencia. Y como en Afrodita el mar remoto duplicó la magnolia, levantando sus senos, la tierra así te hizo, cebolla. Clara como un planeta y destinada a relucir, constelación constante, redonda, rosa de agua, sobre la mesa de las pobres gentes. Generosa deshaces tu globo de frescura en la consumación ferviente de la olla y el jirón de cristal al calor encendido del aceite se transforma en rizada pluma de oro. También recordaré cómo fecunda tu influencia el amor de la ensalada y aparece que el cielo contribuye dándote fina forma de granizo, a celebrar tu claridad picada sobre los hemisferios de un tomate, pero al alcance de las manos del pueblo, regada con aceite espolvoreada, con un poco de sal, matas el hambre del jornalero en el duro camino. Estrella de los pobres, hada madrina, envuelta en delicado papel, sales del suelo eternal, intacta, pura, como semilla de astro, y al cortarte el cuchillo en la cocina, sube la única lágrima sin pena. Nos hiciste llorar sin afligirnos. Yo cuanto existe celebré, cebolla, pero para mí eres más hermosa que un ave de plumas cegadora. Eres para mis ojos globo celeste, copa de platino, baile inmóvil de anémona nevada, y vive la fragancia de la tierra en tu naturaleza cristalina. Oh, qué lindo, my God. It's so beautiful. I mean, that he dedicates this full time and also book to write to the simple things in life is so beautiful, because who we use cebolla or onion all the time in our daily life, and sometimes we don't think where it comes from and how wonderful nature and the earth and the soil are given to us this wonderful gift. And talking about gift, you are given to us also wonderful gift. So we spoke about la cebolla. Now we know, because of the poem before, that the empanada come in different size and in different taste. So let's talk a little bit about the empanada, the cheese empanada. This is very favorite and very famous. And my friend the other day, she was super happy. I mean, she couldn't eat it. She wanted to eat another, but then she was complaining, oh, it's a little bit heavy. Yeah, of course it's heavy. So tell us, Jessie.
Yeah, so, you know, empanadas come in different size, taste, different fillings. Right now in my food court, we have 10 different types of empanadas, 10 different fillings for our empanadas.
Yeah.
I then included sweet empanadas. So I have a brownie Nutella empanada, yeah, and I have a guava cream cheese empanada.
Oh.
So you can get as creative as you want with our empanadas. You can add pretty much anything to an empanada, and they taste amazing.
Yeah, I agree, because what is very important is the dough and the ingredient that you put in the empanada. I was thinking about, because Neruda also wrote a wonderful poem about the artichoke, so mm-hmm. I thought maybe to create a Mediterranean empanada with artichoke and olive, because yes, the pino also take olive, the eggs, the olive, the raisin, and the meat. That is the typical kind of Chilean empanada. And then you add also the chicken empanada. How is that?
Yeah, so for the chicken, we have three different types of chicken. I started with the pino chicken, which is pretty much the same process of making as the beef pino, but with chicken. Just because there's a big community here in Oregon that don't eat beef. So we made the same one, but with chicken so that they could taste kind of the process of making a pino.
Yeah, but that is go to the oven or go to the, do you fry or go to the oven also? The chicken empanada.
You can do both. You can do either way. You can fry them or put them in the oven. Right now in my court, we were frying all of our empanadas.
Yeah, this is what you told me the other day. But you know that in my case and in my case of Ender also, we cannot eat anything that is fried because of health situations. So the other is an alternative. Even sometimes if it's too greasy also, we cannot eat it. And it's a pity because I used to eat a lot of empanada when I was in Chile growing up. After I got sick, but still sometimes Fred loved it, so he liked it to have almost once a month. And going back to the oral tradition, have you adapted your grandma recipe to your own desire? How, or are you following her recipe exactly the way she used to make the empanada or other food?
The pino, I have kept it the same way she makes it, just because I'm very sentimental of the taste of it. It brings me back to my childhood.
Sure.
So I didn't want to change anything of it. But the other meats I make and the chickens I make, I have modified it and I have added more of my taste to it.
Okay, very good. And what other dishes do you have there? What other product do you offer? Because I could see when I went to see you, to meet you, that you have a different kind of, you have a hot dog and you have other things. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so we also offer sandwiches, the popular sandwiches we would eat in Chile. We also the Chilean donuts. We offer sopaipillas, which is a fried pumpkin bread. That's one of our very popular items in our menu. People in here love our sopaipillas. We also offer chorillanas, which is our version of loaded fries. And I added, because I like to experiment, chicken alfredo loaded fries.
So you are making me hungry already. And with all of this, thinking about everything, you made me hungry and you made me homesick. Two different things. And this is what is nice about food, I think, the smell and the memory that it brings, and also all the dedication that you put into every dish that you cook. I think it's wonderful, Jessie, that you continued that tradition within yourself and in a foreign country. How you feel about it?
Bringing a little bit of our traditions, our culture to the people of Oregon has been so hard feeling to me. I mean, honestly, it makes my heart full because I also wanted to bring all of this to my kids. I have two little girls, and they are half Chilean, half Indian. So in our house, we are very international, if you can say that. So I wanted them to have a piece of Chile as well.
Oh, I think that is gorgeous, because you are also passing to them the oral tradition, something yes. that you learned from your grandma and you are bringing in Chile. Ender wants to make you to ask you a question. Okay, go ahead, Ender.
Oh, hello. Yeah, my name is Ender, and I am Consuelo's friend here. I manage public affairs programming here at KBOO, so it's always wonderful to, you know, meet and talk to guests that Consuelo brings to the station, so thank you. So I have a question about empanadas, and it's, I think most people like empanadas.
Yes, yes.
So my question is, what about... Okay, do you do anything to cater to the plant-based community? Because I am plant-based, which means that eating any animal is, you know, definitely impossible. And I hear, tell me about that.
Yeah, so we, in our menu, I have actually quite a few friends who are vegetarians. And I myself was vegetarian for almost 4 years. So I absolutely understand the community, and I wanted to also for them to have options with us, especially with our empanadas. So we have right now 4 different types of empanadas available for vegetarians in our menu.
What kind? For example, you put a vegetable. What do you do?
So I have a veggie which has only vegetable. It's like a curry veggie that we put in our empanada. I also have humita, which is a creamy corn with some vegetables and cheese.
What the Mexican call tamales.
Right.
In some ways.
It's similar to the tamales. This is more like the Argentinian version of empanadas. I have cheese and corn. I have cheese and mushrooms and just regular cheese. And also the guava and cream cheese and the brownie Nutella, which are also veggies.
Okay. So I hear a lot of cheese. So what about like proper plant-based, meaning like no dairy, no eggs. Yeah. Do you have options?
The veggie curry, it's a non-cheesy, non-dairy empanada that has veggies and coconut cream on it.
Wow, that sounds delicious. And I'll conclude my little part because I Consuelo needs to go back. But I think I'm going to give you $1 million idea. What about tofu empanadas? Think about
it. Nice. Very good. Yeah, she's always very flexible. I told her several ideas the other day, and she looked at me like, I will see where we go with this. Okay, tell us, other audience, where they can locate you. Give us your address and the name of your carrito, food car.
So our food court is called Cachay Po. It's a Chilean slang.
Spell the name so this way they can write.
Right. It's CACHAIPO, Cachay Po. We are located in downtown Hillsboro at the Hillsboro Downtown Station. It's a new pod. They just turned just a year, a few months back. So it's a brand new pod. It's a very nice location with indoor seating, and there's about 30 other food courts in there. So there's a lot of options for everybody, and it's just a really nice community in there.
Yeah. Do you have a website also, Jesse?
Yes, I do. I'm mostly active on our social media, Cachaypo PDX. But we also have a website. It hasn't been so updated like our social media.
Okay. so this our audience can go to Hillsborough like I did, and they can be outside or inside. There are all kind of different food. It's a very nice place. It's big. You can find Italian, Thai, Chilean, Chinese, who you name it, even French. In front of her, there is a creperie. So I was super happy because my entree was the empanada, and then the dessert was the creperie. And it's a nice place to go with the children and spend a couple of hours and learn about the world. Food is a culture tools that we have at hand to really start learning about other culture and product and why they have the curry, for example, in the Thai food, why the empanada was born and all of that. Okay, my dear, I really appreciate your participation. I am sorry you couldn't come today because what happened, but like I told you yesterday, everything happened for a reason. So take a rest and keep in touch because the empanadas has to come here. The people at the station want to try your empanada. So that is a commitment that I made with Ender. And that I made with you. So as soon as you are able to, you let me know, and we will figure out how I bring or you come, and you again can be a guest in our program, and we have the opportunity to taste your wonderful empanadas.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. I will make sure to bring some empanadas.
Okay, that will be great. Thank you very much. Ciao, ciao. Bye, bye. And bye. Now Ender wants to ask some questions.
Well, Consuelo, it's been quite a while since you started this program, and tell us, just give me your immediate reactions about your experience so far.
My immediate reaction is that has been a year of a wonderful experience. I have been enjoying every guest, every opportunity to meet talented people, intelligent people, artistic people, that has been bringing a lot of joy to my life. And this hour is very valuable to me because first the community of the radio, and also I feel that I am serving the community, bringing these talented people to let them know what they're doing and how they can get more people know their poem, their literature, their food. Anything that has a creativity is important to me. I value art over many other things in my life, and I always feel terrible grateful of having this opportunity. Autobiography is a very close to my heart. I have read a lot of autobiography in my life, and I think Kerry was asking me today why that, and I think it's one way to get to know who we are. When we start writing or reading about others, we share our humanity, and it's great to see how other people deal with pain, with sorrow, with joy, with frustration, and with the writing craft and many other things.
Yeah, I think that, the community definitely benefits, you know, from having your input and your kind of like your historical knowledge about the meaning of autobiography. And, you know, I think, I have to remind the audience, just in case they forget, that they are listening. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland on the dial, 90.7 FM here in Portland, and also throughout the world on KBOO.FM, also available on our app that is available for Android and Apple phones. And we're here in the air room with Consuelo, who is the creator and host of Once Upon a Time, which is one of our new public affairs programs. So it's becoming less new every month, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
But it is definitely still considered new. And, you know, I think many people might not get a clear idea about what autobiography is and the meaning of opening up to that concept. Can you yes, illuminate us
sure.
on that. Yeah.
Well, the program has been already a year that went so fast. Autobiography is like auto is all always means self. So that's mean that you write about your life, your experience, your problem, conflict, crisis, whatever you want to write. And memoir is when somebody else write about your life. So in my view, autobiography is much more personal, and it give you a chance to heal whatever happened in your life, and to, like I said before, to learn more about who you are, what kind of human being you were and you became. And that knowledge, I think, is important to heal. We all carry some pain and some sorrow from our past, and we need to let it go. And to put it on writing, it helps you. And also it helps other people to go through different kind of crisis or conflict in their life. And I think autobiography, especially I read, I still read a lot of women autobiography. Simone de Beauvoir, one of my favorite writer, French writer. I read her when I was 18 years old, and three volume of her, and then four volume of her autobiography. And it changed completely my life. After that, it was a before and after, because reading that what she did in at that time in France, and how conservative and bourgeois her family was, similar to mine in many ways, I thought, okay, I will cut everything that I don't think is proper or good for me. And I did. And it caused a big crisis within myself and my parents at that time. And books are like a bird, because they fly and they change your life.
So books fly and change your life, huh? Yes. And I want to invite the audience. We're almost, I think, about 15 minutes, or less than 15 minutes. I would say 13 minutes till noon, till, you know, the end of this episode for today. You're welcome to call 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And we can ask Consuelo, like, why did she start doing this? And you know what? That's my next question, Consuelo. Why did you feel that you wanted to utilize your time doing this?
I think first is the community. I have been working as a volunteer in different places, especially in Chile, since I was a teenager. So I think it's important to collaborate with our community. And how I was new in Portland, I thought that would be a good opportunity. And I love the radio. I always love the radio. I think I spoke about that in my first program, how the radio came to my life. And still today, I love it more than TV in some ways. I think radio, somebody the other day said a stupid thing, oh, the radio should be deleted, erased, bye-bye. And I wrote to that person, I said, are you kidding? What are you saying? No, the radio is super important. You go to a clinic, you go to a hospital, and people are not necessarily watching TV. They're listening to the radio, to the many lonely people that there are in the world. We listen radio. It's like a book, and it's a companion, it's a friend, it's a way of learning, it's a tool. So no, the radio will never go away. And no, especially when still we have a public radio that all of you, many of you, generous people and with vision, support this station. This is what we need, more members, so this way we can keep educating people and having fun, because this is what I have been trying with this program, to bring a different angle of how autobiography is. It's not necessarily a word, but in this case was the food. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that, well, I agree with you. radio is not going anywhere. And, you know, the way I see it, honestly, is like, if we ever have an issue with our satellites, you know, I've said this a couple of times, like on my show, I have a show on the fourth Friday of the month at 8 o'clock, Squirrels Know, and sometimes I mention this. It's like, look, guys, if we ever have an emergency where we lose our satellites for a week or two and we just don't have the internet, you know, then what are we going to do? It's going to be public radio. It's going to be this platform that is really going to inform you about what's going on. And this is something that, you know, like right now, like, I don't know, I could say like my generation, you know, Gen Z, as they call us, we are, well, you know, very much into digital media, you know, what we call podcasting. But this whole idea of podcasting was originated with community radio. It was born with community radio years ago, the idea of like just putting a microphone in front of a citizen and have them, you know, speak their ideas, give their opinions. So yeah, I feel like we are very blessed to still, you know, be part of this platform here. And we have a caller, right?
Yeah, we have a caller, but I want to follow one second.
Okay, let's follow up.
When we have an earthquake in Chile, the only way to know what is going on is the radio. The big earthquake that we have in 2010, 7.8, was the radio, especially for people who had radio with battery. And those were the people who were working at the radio at that time. They were able to tell the rest of the country what was going on.
Yeah,
okay, go. Right. Who is there? I want to talk with the caller. Carrie.
Hi, Consuelo.
Hola. Hi, how are you?
Hey, it's Norma.
Yes. I can recognize your voice. How are you, my friend?
I am good. I have a couple of questions for you. One, first of all, I'd like to say I really have enjoyed your program the last year, and I've learned a lot about journaling and doing my own notes, even remembering childhood experiences that I can put in there when I write something fancier than just my notes in my book. Anyway, I do that. And then the other thing is the empanada. When I was in Chile and when I met you 24 years ago, we had some for lunch one day, and I remember them fondly, and I always have thought a Chilean sandwich. Would that be correct or not?
No. The empanada is something different because usually go to the oven and the sandwich is something cold and it's not made by dough, and it's completely different. It's more traditional like everywhere in the world. But now it's true that the empanada, you can find it in Chile, in Argentina, in Peru, and many, many countries now. It has been growing, the popularity, and every place does a different kind of recipe. But still, we think that originate in Chile, but I have the impression that maybe originate in the native community of Chile or Peru. I have the feeling, because the Inca, they were so well developed as a civilization, so mm-hmm. I think maybe the whole concept start there. But I am so happy that you remember, and I am very proud of you that you have been starting writing a few things about your childhood, your marriage, and your life. That is very interesting, because you have been traveling all over the world and learning a lot, and also working as a volunteer in many foundations. So your life itself has a lot to teach to younger women, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you. You were my inspiration, so that's why I'm writing.
But you are mine too, and you have been my mentor in many ways, as I tell you every Sunday when we speak. And so this is what it is. I mean, it's important to, even the oral tradition is very nice, because we have to preserve that way of trespassing experience, knowledge, and also a star in Native America, for example, was a way to understand all the universe reaction to season, to the moon, and all the myth. And they were trespassing generation to generation through music, through word, through festival, all kind. And this is in itself very rich. and some still some you have seen it all over the world when you travel. Some community still celebrate that. Now that we have the day of Los Muertos, this is what it is. This was traditional oral tradition. What we are going to celebrate at the end of this month.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate that. So thank you very much for doing the program.
Thank you very much for calling. And keep enjoying, okay?
Okay.
Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Consuelo, so we have about, let's see, 6 minutes. Let's say 5 minutes. Let's say 5 minutes just to round it down. One important question, I hope you can answer it in less than 5 minutes. I know, yeah, less than 5 minutes here. Did you have kind of like a special experience, you know, that made you realize that through journaling, through the, you know, the idea of autobiography, that you can heal? Like, is there a specific experience in your life that you remember that happened that forced you or pushed you to use autobiography as a healing tool?
Yeah, I think when I came to Oregon the first time, and mainly that time, of course, I had a journal. It wasn't a gratitude journal, but I had a journal because to my first time in Oregon was very, very hard, very, very lonely. And I was just married. I didn't feel that my English was so good. Still, I don't feel that it's so good anyway. And my French was coming before the English, so that confused me. And so at that time, I wrote a lot about how lonely I felt, that I didn't have my own identity, that very few people really knew me. And also when I started the university, I went to OSU to finish my bachelor. That situation changed a little bit. And now in this second time coming to Portland for the first time, I had my journal. This time, gratitude journal, and it helped me to heal the pain of I lost my husband, my family, and again, a little bit of loneliness and a little bit of not knowing where I was going and if I will find a job or I will go back to Chile and all those kind of anxiety. And my friend who just spoke, she helped me a lot. And to read, the other day I was reading the beginning of my journal and I thought how interesting how I have been trying to resolve my challenge. So certainly to write is a tool that I use every time that I feel anxious or I feel sad or even when I am very happy. I try to find 5 good things every day to give thanks. And yesterday I found a nice sentence to say, Joyce is the best, is the simplest way to be thankful. If you are a joyful people and you feel gratitude for being alive and to have people around you, you care, and to be also contributing to other people's life.
Yeah, contributing to other people's lives. Do you think that that's what you're doing right now with your show, Once Upon a Time?
Yes, and that is one of the things. Every Friday when I finish the show, I am so excited, even with my cheek all red, because I am so excited about the conversation, about the person who was here, about you helping me carry, and feeling that we are being a tool in the life of these artists, giving them the opportunity to share their craft. And that was one of my main objective. And I am very, very happy. It never was like the first call that I have in my first program. Oh, this is a little bit egotistic. No, I never thought that I will be speaking or writing or reading only about my writing. No, that wasn't my main purpose. My main purpose was to give the opportunity to other people to show their talent. And I have been very lucky that I have found people by accident many times that they are able and they want to come because they feel also that it's important for them to communicate what they do.
Mm-hmm. And well, I think we're running out of time. So I just want to ask you, what would you tell somebody in the audience right now that maybe, because let me just be clear, like sometimes I get an email or two of listeners that they think that, oh, that maybe KBOO, like you need this and you need that and the other thing, and let me complain here and there. What would you tell them about, you know, like your experience here? Like, how do you feel about the work that KBOO is doing right now in the community?
Oh, I think the work that we all are doing is great. I think it's a huge collaboration to our Portland community as well other community, and we all try. It's wonderful to see how many people work as a volunteer. That is a very important part of the station, and also, like I said, the contribution from our audience, that they contribute in one way or another to preserve our tradition and to create new program and new opportunity for people. Some people ask me, how did you get to the radio? I wrote. I wanted so badly.
You just came in and yeah. That's it. You got your show just like that. Well, we have to go. And thank you so much for letting me ask you these questions. Thank you to Carrie Cantrell, who is the host and producer of Let's Talk, which is one of our new public affairs programs here. So thank you, Carrie. Thank you so much. And thank you, Consuela, for the work. And, you know, KBOO is better because KBOO has people like Carrie Cantrell and Consuela here helping us, you know, engage the community.
Thank you very much to all the people who are listening, and you are welcome to keep listening the other Friday, and we still will be here, and we will have wonderful. Okay. Maybe I should have 2 hours.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.